There's still time to get holiday ready. Right Rug Flooring makes it easy with next day installation and 24-month special financing with approved credit. Carpet, hardwood, luxury vinyl, and tile. We have everything you need to make your home shine for family and friends this season. Schedule a free in-home estimate or find a showroom near you. Visit RightRug.com. RITERUG.com. Be holiday ready with Right Rug Flooring.
Right here, right now.
And that song just screams football. If I ever heard a song that screams football. Bob Ellison, who is that? What's the song?
It's 1964, The Temptations. Mr. David Ruffin and Eddie Kendricks and the gang. The Lions were good in the early 60s.
So in light of the Detroit Lions matchup, we got to play a little Temptations.
I think so. Right out of Motown, man.
And I love the subtlety of the lyrics. Girl, why you got to make me feel blue? It's so subtle there. But hey, it was your turn for the music.
Yeah, my call.
And you made a list, correct?
Of songs. I put a few things together, yeah.
We're not allowed to see the list. It's top secret.
We're starting with Motown tonight. There might be some more Motown. That's my fave, so, you know.
I don't know. Every song from the 60s, I think, warrants a rap song. Is that the trade-off? every Temptations equals a little Lil Wayne, maybe a little 2 Chainz, Bob.
It's all up to you, isn't it? I know nothing.
Okay. Well, let's get into a bye week. How'd you spend your bye week? You went out to La Crosse, correct?
La Crosse in Rochester, Minnesota. Never really been over there and had a lot of fun. It was Oktoberfest in downtown La Crosse, an annual event.
Which gets a little rowdy, you were saying?
Yeah, I would say. Yeah.
Okay.
A lot of heavy drinking. Could hardly get into our hotel room on Saturday afternoon. Beer games right down that second floor hallway.
Beer pong, right in the hallway, yeah. Right there.
You got it.
Did part of you want to go out and, you know, take the wife and maybe take on some of these college kids 2-on-2?
No.
No?
No.
Did they have that when you were in college? Michigan?
Yeah, there was drinking, but not to that extent.
No beer pong?
No. No.
Okay, so no beer pong in La Crosse. What did you and Pat do?
Well, the highlight was the Friday night football game.
Okay.
Friday Night Lights. We went half an hour straight north of La Crosse, and we saw the Wesby Norsemen against the Gale Ettrick Trempealeau Redhawks, schools of about 400. And we talked to the great sports writer in La Crosse, Mr. John Casper, and he set us up. I asked John where a high school field was with no track so you can get close to the action. Track costs you 20 yards of distance, you know. So he said, yeah, you go to Galesville, Wisconsin, for this consolidated school district, no track, nice and tight. So we sat right on about the 48-yard line, row 6 among the GET parents. I would say the out-of-bounds line from our seat was probably 10 yards, 9, 11 yards away. And it was a great game, Tyler.
So what's the trade-off there, Bob? I imagine if you sacrifice the track, you sacrifice quality of play, right? I mean, you're going to go to a smaller school.
Yeah.
Not as great athletes, not as great of a game.
We love the small schools. You and I attended small schools.
Yeah, I know, but I'm just... So when you're weighing your options here, though, the track is key.
The track, getting rid of the track is key, so you can really feel, you can see the coaches operate right in front of you, and you can hear the hitting, and you're right there on top of it. That was the key. And this game was extremely well played. Wesby won it, as John wrote in Saturday's La Crosse Tribune. A German sophomore foreign exchange student hit about a 27-yard field goal at the buzzer to give Wesby a 17-14 victory.
That's incredible. So you saw a great game then.
Terrific. 72 degrees at kickoff. Homecoming. Wow. Just the best. Love it.
Wow. Yep. That's great. So good. Yep. Good bye week then.
Yes, sir.
So you couldn't get away from football, though. It dragged you in high school. The purity
of
the game.
Yes.
Yes.
And college, but the high school. Now, let's talk awesome. About your weekend. Your weekend at home.
Yeah, just Thursday through Sunday morning. Went back to Western New York, just south of Buffalo. Saw the fam. good chance just to kind of catch up with them. My sister's pregnant, going to have a baby soon, so awesome to see her and her husband, who's like a brother, both teachers. Austin, my brother, getting ready for hockey season. He's a scout for the Sabres, like we've talked about, and diving right into it. Hockey just started up this week, so he's really pumped about that. Good chance to get home. You know, you don't get those breaks often, so it was fun.
Wow. Yeah. And you got back, well, you wrote something on the NFC North Sunday night. You wrote that, right?
Yep.
And you've been hitting it ever since. Yep.
So, I mean, let's get right into it. It's Detroit Lions week, and the Packers are going for 23 straight at home against the Lions. The last time Detroit won in the state of Wisconsin, 1991, Bob. Mike Tomczak was the quarterback, I believe.
I think he was.
Okay.
Tzak. Right. Ron Wolf had been on the job about 3 weeks.
Unbelievable. I mean, you did a really extensive story about this whole streak last year, I believe, right? And you went through each game. And the thing that is remarkable about this, I mean, the Packers have been favored, right, heavily in most of these games.
All but one game. Detroit was favored, just one of the 22.
I mean, it just shows how bad the Lions have been.
Especially at quarterback, really.
Putrid. You
know? And how great the Packers have been, including quarterback, obviously, yeah. You know, it's interesting. From 1968, the first year of the Phil Bengston era, to 1990, the end of the Infante thing, or 91, neither team did much of anything, Detroit or Green Bay. But in Wisconsin, Detroit had a winning record. I think they were 12-10-2, and now they're 0-22. And Detroit, yeah, Detroit was very competitive in the 90s. Now they've been horrible in the 2000s, and they're finally getting a little bit better, but 0-22 doesn't make a whole lot of sense.
It really doesn't. You know, talking to players in the locker room this week, and when we had Matthew Stafford on the conference call, everybody involved with this game says the streak doesn't matter. It's not something that they're bringing up either side, but as much as they say that, you can't ignore the historical backdrop to this game. I mean, the Lions come into this game maybe with one of the best teams they've fielded in this situation. Hot quarterback. They have a running game now. Calvin Johnson. The front four gets after you. This is a big game for Green Bay. I mean, they can't drop to 1-3 right now.
So you got 3-1 against 1-2, and the spread is Green Bay by 7. Isn't that something? The streak means a lot to the odds makers.
It must.
A real lot, yeah. Yeah, it's a huge game for the Packers. I mean, Detroit's already 2-0 in the division. There's only 6 division games for each team, obviously. So, yeah, it's big.
Point blank, then. I mean, is this a must-win for the Packers?
No, absolutely not.
As Marv Levy said, World War II was a must-win, right?
Yeah, he did. You're a Buffalo man and co-college grad, right?
Right, right. Yeah. As we watch Fred Jackson on TV, not a co-college. But it's a huge game, though, Bob. I mean, you drop to 1-3 at this point in the season. Detroit would move to 4-1. I know that the Packers dug themselves out of a hole last year, but maybe it's not a must-win. But, man, they just cannot drop this game at home. They'd really be putting themselves in dire straits by October standards.
All right, so Tyler, can the Lions win this game?
I think so, sure. I mean,
why?
Reggie Bush, I mean, this is a player that they haven't had really in years since Barry Sanders. They haven't found that running back. They've gone through, I don't know, James Stewart for a little bit. Who else has played running back for these guys?
Well, they had it for Javet. They had it with Javet Best.
Well, kind of. Not really. I mean,
22 games. He was pretty good.
I don't know. I mean, Reggie Bush is, if you watch that Chicago game, I mean, he wasn't just some gimmicky third or fourth option out in space that he was rendered for so long in New Orleans. I mean, I think that you wrote he's kind of looking like that player he was his rookie season with the Saints, and I think he even looks better than that. I mean, he's running between the tackles. He's running guys over. He's spinning. He's jumping. He's hurtling. Clay Matthews said today he looks like that guy back at USC. If he's that kind of player, it takes a load off of Matthew Stafford's shoulders. And, man, his turnovers have just killed Detroit in the series. Last year, defensive touchdowns, M.D. Jennings, Mike Daniels.
Mike Daniels, yeah.
The year before that, he had 5 picks in 2 games in 2 losses to the Packers. So, his turnovers have been the difference. If Reggie Bush gets going, if the defense can get a little pressure on Aaron Rodgers, they've shown they can limit the big play against Green Bay. I mean, the Packers won both games last year, but the big plays were hard to come by with Gunther Cunningham's, you know, cover two looks. Right. I think that they can hang around in this game, absolutely.
All right, so you did something on the Lion front. You've talked to the Packer interior lineman story in today's paper. So let's look at some of these matchups. We got Ndamukong Suh against T.J. Lang for the first time.
Right.
Let's talk about that one.
Yeah, you know, and T.J. talked about this a little bit today himself. He's never faced Suh. When they played the Lions last year, he's lined up at tackle. It was when they had all those injuries up front. Either that or he's been on the other side. I think everybody in the locker room kind of knows where they're going to get into Ndamukong Suh. And with everything that happened Thanksgiving Day a couple years ago, these players get asked about Suh a lot. And really, it seems like they do have that respect for his game. I mean, they know that he's somebody that's going to play through a whistle. To quote Josh Sitton, he said, quote, "He kind of flips the switch when he's playing the game. He kind of turns a little bit crazy. He plays on that line all the time and crosses that line. So that's just how he plays. We know it. Everyone knows it. When any of that stuff happens, you have to ignore it and be above it. If we dictate the tempo and the way the game is going to go, then we'll have no problems." I mean, Suh, I mean, the kick to the groin on Matt Schaub, the stomp, the low block, that stuff gets the headlines. But he's playing great football right now, and he's going to be a problem for Green Bay.
Is he better than Geno Atkins? Personally, I'd take Atkins.
Would you really? Yeah. And T.J. Lang shut him down.
So did Sitton. I mean, I think Lang was over him 29 times, Sitton okay. 18. But, I mean, I think that interior three for Green Bay, they all played well, and they got to have high confidence now. Mm-hmm. I mean, they're running the ball. They've just – I mean, Atkins was rendered invisible, and they're coming off that. Atkins is the hottest thing going at DT. He really is. I know Sue's got, you know, a big rep and high in the draft, and Atkins was a fourth-round pick, but – personally, I'd take Atkins over Suh, no question. And he had zero. He had no pressures, no sacks, no tackles, zero. Played 60-some snaps. So I would think they're high. Okay, now Fairley. Nick Fairley, the guy from Auburn, kind of a pedestrian rookie year, came on last year. Now he's playing really good football. He will be against Josh Sitton. How do you see that?
Boy, you know, it seems like the back problems that Sitton had there in the opener, he's kind of beyond that. But he was pretty honest about the whole position switch, too. I mean, he admitted himself that he's not 100% over there yet, that he thinks he's doing a good job, but it doesn't feel like right guard and the comfort level he had at the position he's played for so long. And man, I think that everybody kind of makes a big deal when a player moves from guard to tackle, you know, like T.J. Lang the last couple years, but a lot of coaches always say that the bigger change is going from the left side to the right side or the right side to the left side. Footwork, hand placement, all the little habits that you've developed, the communication, they just kind of flips. Yeah. And, I mean, it's a 180-degree change. So,
yep.
I think it's – Nick Fairley is a really good player, but so is Josh Sitton. And it seems like Sitton has played better since that opener against San Francisco.
I agree. Last week
right.
against the Bengals, he was really good.
Now, they do some movement up there, not as much as some of the teams they've played, but Lang and Sitton, these guys, have said that they'll twist and stunt and do a lot of that. You think back to the play that really kind of sealed Chicago's fate, Ford Field. Suh kind of circled around and got to Cutler and then Fairley scooped it up for the touchdown. So they can do some different things up there. But you're right. I mean, against Atkins, they played well. It's just kind of a matter of like getting that communication down, that chemistry down, and this is still kind of a remade interior three. This is going to be a big test for them.
So the Packers have seen really good fronts in the Niners and in the Bengals. Washington was okay on the outside.
Philip Merlin.
Phillip's on the street.
They kicked him to the curb.
Do you believe that?
Kicked him to the curb.
Yeah. Okay, now Detroit. Let's look at their other players. Ziggy Ansah is the right end. He'll be against David Bakhtiari. Ansah, you know, they're in that wide nine technique, and on early downs, their ends are in four-point stances. Yeah. They're coached by Jim Washburn, a great D-line coach for Tennessee for many years. Really a high-energy, tremendous coach.
What are the advantages of a four-point stance?
I really don't have any idea. For goal line, yeah, if you're going to submarine. Out there, I don't know. Huh. I don't understand it, but I'm sure Washburn has rhyme or reason for it.
I mean, I think before the draft, we talked a bunch about Ziggy Ansah. We wrote some stories on him leading up to the draft. I'm really surprised that he's played about as well as he has so far. I mean, coming in, he had bust written all over him, bust potential at least written all over him. Somebody who just picked up football 2-3 years ago.
Yeah.
Came over from Ghana to be the next LeBron James. Couldn't make it in basketball, BYU. Couldn't make it in track. At football, everybody's making fun of him because the guy can't even put on his pads. You know, I remember the coach telling me some of the special teams at work that they did. He was just a punching bag. He was getting tossed around. And now here he is in the NFL a couple years later. I mean, he's not a force by any means. It's too soon to say he's a Jason Pierre-Paul, but he's kind of trending that way.
He's a strong guy. He's got fantastic athletic ability. You know, one thing in college, he did when he did play, he sure played hard. Mm-hmm. And you see that. His chases are amazing. He's pursuing all over the field, so he's a factor, big factor. And he's going to have he's got power. I mean, Bakhtiari can't just set on his outside stuff. You got to play him honest. Now, on the other side, Jason Jones, a former Titan and Seahawk. I've always liked Jason Jones from Eastern Michigan, T.J. Lang's old teammate. Out for the year with a torn patellar tendon. So that's opened the door for Willie Young. Seventh-round pick about 4 years ago, kid from North Carolina State. Gangly, 6'5", 260. But now, since he got the starting job, he played really good against the Bears.
Okay.
And he's a real threat. He's a hustler. He's a little on the crazy side. He's had a lot of penalties. But the guy is I'm not saying he's a feared pass rusher, but I think he's a pretty darn good one. So Barkley's going to have a real problem there, too.
And Barkley's had his rougher moments this season,
too. Yeah, he's given up a sack almost every game. And
now, you wrote about it last week. Marshall Newhouse, do we see him anytime soon?
Not the way Tom Clements approached my question on that. Absolutely not. They're committed to these two tackles, and I think one of them would really have to go in the tank before we'd see Newhouse.
It's interesting.
Let's talk about the backup center, Greg Van Roten. Foot injury, Monday in practice?
Right.
Out for weeks, according to McCarthy? Okay, so let's say Dietrich Smith goes down. I assume Barkley, don't you?
Got the work there during training camp. Remember, that was one of the storylines during camp, is Barkley going to have a chance to settle anywhere on this offensive line? They really worked him all over the place, I guess, for this potential situation. They know injuries are going to happen. They've happened these last few years. Mike McCarthy got a little upset at questions about the injuries and the potential doomsday scenarios, but I guess that is something that could happen at some point.
Yeah. All right, well, let's look at the rest of the line, D.
All right, run it down there, Bob.
DeAndre Levy from Milwaukee Vincent, ex-Badger, really a good player. He runs. He's a run-and-hit guy. I think he's tenacious. Seems to be a little bit under control, which had been his problem. In the middle, the guy who calls the defense, Stephen Tulloch, 5'10 and a half, but he's a pretty good player.
Mm-hmm.
Plays 100% of the snaps, as does Levy. Ashley Palmer doesn't play much. I mean, they're in nickel all the time against Green Bay. We don't have to worry about him. Now let's talk about that wonderful secondary. They're good at safety all of a sudden.
Right.
Louis Delmas is back from injury. Good player all the way. Glover Quinn, I think he's a capable safety. He's not a great player, but he'll hit. He's got some range. He used to play corner. He was a corner as recently as 2010.
Paid a lot of money to get him, too.
Yeah, they did. So, okay, they're both healthy, and they're a lot better than Amari Spivey and Don Carey and all these safeties they've had. The litany of safeties is just incredible in Detroit. Now let's look at the corners. Chris Houston missed another day of practice. This is Thursday night, so he missed another day today on Thursday with a hamstring. He's not playing. All right, he's their number one corner by far. Wow.
And that would be a big loss in this game. Domino effect on how you cover Green Bay's receivers, what do you expect here?
So what do you got? You got Rasheen Mathis, the former really good starter for almost a decade in Jacksonville. He's big. He was good. He blew out his knee in mid-2011. He played poorly last year. He was on the street 5 months before the Lions signed him out of desperation in mid-August. He's going to probably be their number one guy. Darius Slay, second-round pick, Mississippi State, the rookie. Had a great pro day or combine, 4.34. You watch him now? He's timid. He's indecisive. He gets beat. I knew he needed, you know, all the scouts said he needed reps, real low Wunderlich score. This is probably their number two. Their number three is Bill Bentley, a third-round pick last year. I see hesitancy in his play, too, at least in this Bear game. And number four is Jonte Green, a sixth-round pick in 2012. Kind of just a guy.
Mm-hmm.
That's what they got, Tyler.
Well, last week, you know, Cincinnati's cover corners really got in the face, got in the grill of Green Bay's receivers, Leon Hall, especially there, and Randall Cobb. Is Cobb a player who might be able to get loose here this game? I mean, he's not going to have a Leon Hall in his face.
Bentley will be in the slot. Mathis and Slay will be outside. All of them could have big games if they can protect.
And that's where the key is. They really rely on that front four getting pressure.
If they don't, it could be 40, 45, 50 points. It could be. The safeties are good, but, I mean, safeties can only do too much. Cunningham's not going to blitz. He's not going to blitz Rodgers. He didn't do it last year. He hasn't done it this year.
Why didn't Green Bay score 45 on these guys last year then?
Well, Houston was on the field for one thing. Who was their other starting corner last year? Was Wright there? That might have been 2011. And their pass rush has always been good, you know. They had another good linebacker last year, too, that left in UFA, Justin Durant. A lot better than Ashley Palmer. So that's their D. I mean, it's okay. It's all right.
Well, we'll find out here. Do you want to hit on the offense before we get into Green Bay and all the injuries the Packers have?
So you discussed Reggie Bush. How many points are the Lions capable of putting up against the Packer D?
Well, I mean, Green Bay really doesn't have excuses in this game. Defensively with injuries, they should be getting Clay Matthews back, should be getting Morgan Burnett back, getting a lot healthier on defense. So I don't know what to expect on what kind of impact Morgan Burnett's really going to make on that secondary. But this is an explosive offense with or without Nate Burleson, who's injured right now. Calvin Johnson's always gotten his against Green Bay. Brandon Pettigrew's one of the better tight ends in the league. Reggie Bush can do things out of the backfield. Chris Durham is going to actually be starting opposite Calvin Johnson. Tallest wide receiver in the NFL, I think, at 6'6". And he beat Devon House on a deep ball there at Lambeau Field last year. House got pulled. Sam Shields came in. And Shields had the big interception there when Detroit was driving to go ahead 21-10. That really kind of changed the complexion of that game. But is Chris Durham really that much of a threat? I don't know about that. Ryan Broyles still kind of hasn't broken out like they would have hoped. Titus Young, I don't know where the hell he is at this point in his life, Bob. Maybe you can tell me.
Yeah, right.
Got some major issues off the field. And I know you can come back to this so much, but Detroit could have had Randall Cobb. I mean, they took Titus Young over Randall Cobb and Torrey Smith. And a few other receivers. I mean, it's talk about making or breaking your team in the draft. There it is.
Decisions haunt you, don't they, on draft day? They have Nate Burleson got in that one car accident with shifting a pizza or whatever. So he's on designated IR. That's a loss. They didn't have any depth there, and now they're down to Durham, Patrick Edwards, Ryan Broyles. Wow. So, and the tight end, I mean, Pettigrew is just an intermediate short receiver. He can't run the seam. Tony Scheffler's really gone downhill. Mm-hmm. He had a concussion 2 years ago. He's dropping the ball. He's not the threat he used to be. I used to like him. Joseph Fourier is a pretty good-looking rookie from UCLA, 6'7". He's not bad, red zone guy. So it's Reggie Bush and Calvin Johnson. That ain't bad, though, is it?
It's not too bad. Bush can do a lot of different things.
What about Calvin Johnson? He doesn't have big numbers right now.
By his standards, right?
Right. He missed 2 days of practice. I guess he does that frequently, right? Mm-hmm. He'll practice tomorrow. So can Green Bay handle Calvin Johnson back there?
Gosh, we were talking about that today at Lambeau, weren't we? I mean, And you go back to a couple years ago when they had Tremont Williams on Calvin Johnson with some help from Morgan Burnett over the top. One game, they did shut him down. The first game in 2011, they come back to Green Bay at Lambeau Field, and Calvin Johnson just, you know, has a career day against Green Bay last year. Continued having some big plays, but the Packers have won these games. I mean, Calvin Johnson has had big days, yet the Packers are still winning those games. So Yeah, maybe he does go for 100 plus again and in a touchdown or something like that. But are those other guys going to hurt you? Devon House, I mean, he says that they do have other weapons and Green Bay is concerned about him and that this isn't the same old Lions receiving core. But I don't know. I don't know if it's there.
Let's look at their old line. New starters at left tackle, right guard, and right tackle. They've changed three.
And they're doing a good job so far this year.
Well, you know, interesting pick. They're, in the third round, they took a guy from Kentucky, which is such a downtrodden program. They took Larry Warford, a 330-pound wide body. Boy, I really mixed opinion on that guy from the personnel people. Can't move. I mean, slow a foot, slow twitch, everything like that. But you watch this guy. He takes up space. He's not lunging in protection. He's been pretty good there. And he's kind of walled off people and stayed on his guy in the run game. He's got some push. So he's been a pretty good starting right guard. A lot better than Steven Peterman, who had been there for about 6 years and was just really just a cast off.
There you go.
They got rid of Steven. At right tackle, they played Gosder Chehalis about the last 4 years. He got shipped out to Indy as a pricey UFA. All right, so Jason Fox won the job during training camp, got hurt in the first game. They've gone to Corey Hilliard, kind of a seven-year veteran. He's only started like 10 games in his career. Hilliard's been all right. He's not terrible. He's okay. Dominic Raiola's gained a bunch of weight, which is probably helpful, and he's not getting ragdolled as much. He looks better. Rob Sims is a pretty good, darn good left guard. And Riley Reiff, the left tackle from Iowa, a first-round pick in 2012.
Mm-hmm.
Personally, I don't like him that much right now. I see him had a lot of problems with Peppers and Julius Peppers. He's not really what he used to be, but I don't know. I think Matthews can really do damage against Reiff if the hamstring holds.
Let's jump right into that then, Bob. Clay Matthews says today he's going to play. Left the game at Cincinnati with the hamstring injury. Said that it was a mutual decision with the medical staff, with his own opinion, and they saw the lead that Green Bay had at that point of the game and decided to sit out to be cautious with the hamstring. He says that he can really gauge where he is with the hamstring, that he knows his threshold of pain and that he wouldn't be out there if he wasn't ready. When I asked him, I mean, are you worried about returning too soon? He said they're not worried about that. He feels fine. He's going to play, made no bones about it. And boy, this Green Bay Packers defense is a heck of a lot different with Clay Matthews and without, aren't they?
Yeah, we saw that in the second half at Cincinnati, didn't we? Matthews has never re-injured a hamstring after he returned during a season. I don't think. He knows his body, like you said.
And that's kind of what he, you know, quipped about there. He said, well, hopefully I got my one out of the way.
Yeah.
So he's had these hamstring problems, but when he's returned, it hasn't lingered, I guess. He's known when to return. You look at his numbers, and he reeled off his sack numbers on cue at his locker today. When he came back after missing four games last year, it was pretty immediate, the impact he made. And he was the player that he was before the injury. So I think you kind of have to take him at his word that he knows his body and that he's ready to go.
So I got an email today from a guy who I have not had time to research this. I don't know if it's true. He said Green Bay has defeated the Lions three times when Matthews wasn't on the field. Has he missed three games against Detroit?
The 2011 regular season finale there, they sat him out.
All right.
The Packers won the game, but the Lions...
A healthy scratch.
Right.
Yeah.
They moved up and down the field. Okay. I guess I don't have it in front of me.
Maybe it's true.
It could be. Good. I mean, he really saw it there last year when he missed four games. Although when he missed the first game at Detroit, Eric Walden got some pressure. I mean, they had some guys that still got after Stafford and wreaked a little havoc. So I'm not so sure about that, but they don't really have that other pass rushing option right now. I mean, Mike Neal is ascending and developing like they'd hope, and we'll probably see a lot more of him into the future. But Nick Perry, still not getting to the quarterback, getting home, making a lot of plays. Three games into the second season, so it's still too soon to write him off by any means, but they'd probably like to see more out of Nick Perry. Malumba, do we see more of him this game?
If Matthews plays his normal amount of snaps, you know, 60 out of 66 or something, I wouldn't think we'd see Malumba.
Yeah, probably not.
Just two guys. I mean,
they're getting some pressure from Daniels. He's off to a pretty fast start.
Right.
Yeah, they need Clay Matthews out there. It's a different team with him.
Completely.
All right.
Right.
Well, here's what, while we're on that topic here, here's what Clay Matthews today said about Mike Neal. He said he's adjusting very well. You know, you think at that transition of defensive ends with their hands down, especially him, where we asked him to play 0-3-5. It didn't matter from the interior with his hand down. But now to come out here and play in a two-point stance, not only rush the passer, but drop into coverage, he's playing fantastic, and he's getting more and more playing time as the weeks have progressed. I mean, you talked about Mike Neal to Clay Matthews and did that story a couple weeks ago. Do you see Mike Neal still kind of that arrow pointing up? I mean, can he be that threat that they've lacked opposite Clay Matthews for so long?
You know, when I asked Kevin Green if he could get 8 to 10 sacks, he says, I'm planning on it. He cut me off. He says, I'm planning on it. So since that article, you know, he played against Cincinnati. A little disappointing. Mm-hmm. I mean, he spent a lot of time against Andrew Whitworth, who was just coming off a bad knee. I thought he'd get a little bit more pressure there. He's feeling his way. It's a new position, you know, and I think he's going to be a lot better in week 9 than he is in week 3. I still like his athletic ability. I like his violence. I like his hustle. And they all claim he really knows football. McCarthy and Kevin Green both said that. So I don't know. He probably has a better chance to be a good pass rusher than Perry, don't right. you think? Yeah.
Right. I mean, he's got
right
some more
now,
explosion to him.
As we speak, yeah. So I don't know. Are either one of them as good as Eric Walden right now? No. But I think Neal has a chance.
Any more words for the fans on Eric Walden, Bob?
No. No, I think we'll let that one pass for a week, aren't I?
All right, we'll let it go. Offensively, Aaron Rodgers, he doesn't have bad games often, Bob. But when he does, he usually bounces back. When you look back at history,
really?
Statistically some of his worst games, right? I mean, last year when they blew the 21-3 lead at Indianapolis, he comes back and he throws 6 touchdowns against the Texans. The couple years before that, they won the NFC Championship game, but his passer rating, that was one of his lowest passer ratings of his career. Obviously, he had a great game in the Super Bowl after that. 7-3, suffers the concussion at Detroit that season, sits out a week, comes back, has the 4 touchdowns against the Giants to save Green Bay's mm-hmm. season. Mm-hmm. 2011, I believe he completed less than half of his passes against Kansas City. Their lone loss of the year, comes back and throws 4 or 5 touchdowns against Chicago in a blowout. He responds when he has a bad game for whatever reason. He bounces back. Ben McAdoo, the quarterback's coach, asking him today, do you see anything different behind the scenes when he has a game like that? He says he's the same guy, prepares the same way, all of that. But he knows how to turn it on. So I think that this, if history tells us anything, Aaron Rodgers is going to have a big game against the Lions Sunday.
His numbers against the Lions, are they real good?
They're pretty good against pretty much everybody he plays, but
yeah.
Last year, you know, last year the Lions seemed to do a decent job, anyways, of taking away the big
yeah.
play. But he was very patient. He had the running touchdown there at Lambeau
mm-hmm.
that was big. Kind of took what was given to him. At Detroit, I mean, including both of us, I mean, and rightfully so, in my opinion, anyways, he gets a lot of criticism for not finishing comebacks, and everybody knows the fourth quarter troubles, all of that. But that was one game where he
right.
did kind of rally the offense and had the big throw to Randall Cobb for the touchdown.
Right.
So
yeah,
he's played well against the Lions.
All right, yeah. I would think he'd play really well, unless the Lions can get in his face, right?
And isn't
That's
this
the chance they
right,
have?
Right. Absolutely, Bob. But could this be the game where Eddie Lacy is showcased, is coming out party kind of a game? He's coming back from the concussion. At San Francisco, admittedly, had the nerves, had the fumble, got benched, took a while to get going, showed some things on the one touchdown drive. Maybe he would have been great against Washington. We don't know. But this might be the game, I think, where Eddie Lacy really gets 17, 18, 20 carries, and they try to get him going.
The Lions, they're giving up 5.2 yards per carry right now. They did a good job against Adrian Peterson in the opener, except for one long run, if
mm-hmm.
I recall. Matt Forte heard him last week.
Or Alfred Morris had a pretty good day against them.
Did he?
Right.
You can definitely run on the Lions. They're one gap. They're shooting up the field. They're playing the run on the way to the passer. That's the way Washburn is always coached. And they have to stop the pass. They have to get after Rodgers or it's going to be in the 40s. And I think they're very susceptible to the run. Now, is Green Bay up to it? Is Lacy up to it, you know? I'm sure they'd like to have Starks, but he's not playing for a while. So I would think Lacy could have a big day.
He could.
Sure.
And you have to expect some Jonathan Franklin after the game that he had in Cincinnati as well. And they called up Michael Hill. I'm not sure if he figures into the plans quite yet, but as DeJuan Harris proved last year, a guy from the practice squad can make an impact and be eased into the offense. So I think everybody should really keep an eye on this guy. Really interesting that he made all the protection calls in college from the backfield.
Yeah,
not a lot of guys do that. I don't care what school you go to. That's impressive.
Never really heard of that.
But speaking of Jonathan Franklin, are we going to see him on kickoffs, Bob? I mean, as we're taping this, the Packers have been very coy, very secretive about who the returner is going to be. You have to think Randall Cobb at least handles punts. And I'm inclined to think he's going to do some kicks as well, but I guess we'll find out here Sunday.
What are their options on kickoffs? Hill? Franklin? They wouldn't go to Shields now.
No.
Jordy Nelson,
pick up Najee Davenport, give him another give him another run.
Too bad Boykin doesn't return kickoffs, you know? I mean,
That's why Jeremy Ross just made so much sense on this roster.
Yeah.
I mean, here's a guy who's gonna return kicks, gonna return punts. You can use him offensively in some different ways, even though he wasn't a pure receiver at Cal. But boy, he just never caught on and he never broke out like they hoped. So it kind of leaves him in this bind. This was the risks that they took. Now they also only have four wide receivers on the team. At one point last year, they had seven by the end of the season.
Seven on the 53?
Well, think about it, Bob. I mean, they had Greg Jennings, Donald Driver, James Jones, Jordy Nelson, Randall Cobb, Jarrett Boykin, Jeremy Ross by the end of the year. Donald Driver was asking to play special teams. So they've had a lot of wide receivers in the past. They can't afford a guy going down there, and now they kind of have these questions in the return game. That's where it gets a little troubling with Randall Cobb, asking him to do too much. Jonathan Franklin, if he could return kicks, that'd really help out.
But let's look at it now. They got this rookie punter, Sam Martin, who's kicking off. There aren't going to be any kickoff returns Sunday. Either side. Maste's going to be bombing them. You know what I mean?
It's a good point. Very true.
The way the game is. It's another ridiculous part of the game, isn't it?
It's a different game, yeah.
Too many injuries on kickoff returns, Tyler. Those horrible blocks and that impact collisions.
But you know what?
Terrible.
But they should really go to 18 regular season games, though, Bob. I mean, that would be a very wise move there.
While we're watching the Bills and the Browns over in the corner here
right,
on TV.
Right, Thursday night football.
Love that
Thursday
night.
Just another hypocritical player safety maneuver by the NFL.
Absolutely.
We could go on for hours about that, I'm sure. All right, what else do you want to get into, Bob?
Shall we talk about their facilities?
Yeah, absolutely.
Let's talk about that.
You did the story over the bye week on kind of some improvements going on around the stadium. Fill the listeners in.
Down in that southeast corner, they're building, almost completed, a large addition. So the weight room is going to be relocated there, and there's going to be a field turf indoor practice area for walkthroughs, only about 30 yards long, but the official 53-yard width, field turf. So they're going to do walkthroughs there rather than going to a gym, which is also in that area adjacent to the locker room, or going down, driving the 2 minutes down to the Don Hudson Center. So, Tyler, they're spending millions doing this, right? The Hudson Center is a five-minute walk or a two-minute drive. They're just relocating a weight room, and they love their weight room the way it is right now. They think that's world class. And it just shows you a couple things. The bottom line out there is extreme. When you add up the last 2 years, net income was $85 million. $85 million.
That's a lot of money.
Tyler, all through the 80s and the 70s, the bottom line, the profit was $400,000. I remember when they won over 1.0. It was a huge headline for the first time.
Is that right? When was that?
Putting I got that spot. In the other room. I'm late 70s, maybe.
Okay.
No, maybe early 80s. something like that. 1.0 profit. Now it's 43, 42 every year. So more power to the Packers. They spend it on the team, and that's where they should be spending it. That's where their fans want it spent. And so Dom Capers used the word how it's more convenient now for players. So
shorter walk, shorter drive.
Shorter walk. And in the dead of winter, if they're got a guy in a rehab situation and it's January and he just leaves the weight room or the trainer area, and then he can just go on a field turf and do some work with the trainers rather than go down to the Hudson Center. So it's a bit extreme. I think it's a, you know, but that's the way it is.
What would you do with $85 million profit there, Bob?
I just don't know. The whole league, the money's crazy.
Maybe do you take Pat the Chef Fusion or Pasquale's, maybe?
We won't return to Oktoberfest, you know, for the bye, right?
Right, right.
Boy, so lacrosse, that's an active bar scene there, isn't it, Tyler?
I mean, you know, that sounds kind of like, sounds kind of fun. I don't know.
You'll be there next year.
I don't know about that, but...
Late September.
New training facility, though. You're right. They're pumping the money back into the team. Overall, good move. It'll be interesting to see. A lot of fans are going to say, Bob, and this is a big criticism right now directed at the Packers, is what's going on with the hamstrings? What's going on with all the injuries? If you have all this money, if you have all these facilities, why can't guys stay healthy? What do you make of all that? Is it just a coincidence that so many guys are suffering from all these hamstring injuries?
Tyler, I don't know.
I don't either. I don't have an answer for people.
I have no clue. I mean, this, I don't know. All this cutting edge stuff. Of course the Packers are on top of all this stuff. I mean, they got a full medical staff, full training staff, top doctors, top trainers, bunch of strength people. Is it coincidence? Somebody's head might roll after if this continues.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, something's got to happen. They got to change. They got to reshuffle the deck somehow, some way.
It's true.
Do you have any idea on these hamstrings? Hamstrings that occur in training camp, okay, you know? Mm-hmm. I get that if there's no hitting. That was the point of my thing. But at this point, I don't have any answer for this.
What do you say? Do you want to get to some questions? Anything else you want to discuss? Morgan Burnett returning. We kind of hit on that a little bit. That's going to be important.
I think we need to discuss Brian Bartlett Starr.
All right.
Brian Bartlett Bart Starr. 17th round pick in 1955 out of the University of Alabama. And Mr. Tyler Dunn made a trip down to Alabama. And you talked to his high school coach. You talked to Bart himself at length and wrote a magnificent story that appeared in Sunday's paper. 100 inches?
Around there, I think so.
It was awesome. I'm really glad our newspaper gave it, you know, great play. And he is Mr. Packer all the way. And I covered him certainly as the GM and coach, but never as a player. So what did you learn about Bart that maybe some things that wasn't in the story?
Yeah, well, thanks a lot, Bob.
Yeah. I
appreciate that.
Great stuff.
Yeah, I mean, just, you know, grateful with our boss, Mike Davis, and then the paper. We can get down there to Alabama and spend a little bit of time with Bart and his old high school coach. And that was really probably the most interesting part of the trip is just doing a little research on Bart Starr and realizing that his high school coach, Bill Moseley, is still with us, that he's still around. He turns 91 this month, lives in Montgomery, just south of Birmingham there. So just welcomed me into his home, was willing to sit down and talk about Bart Starr. And I just think that really... So much has been said, so much has been written about Bart Starr, Hall of Famer, all the championships, all the, you know, the two Super Bowls, failure as a coach. But I just think that Bill Moseley, that was probably the most fun, is sitting down with somebody who just has a rare perspective. He was really the first true coach that worked with Bart Starr and saw something different in him. He said he was a quarterback that looked you in the eyes if you had a critique of him, a problem with a three-step drop, a five-step drop, whatever. Bart Starr went home where his military father was, and he worked on it. He was very disciplined. He got the belt from dad from time to time. But, yeah, I think that Bill Moseley says that perspective. He played with George Blanda, who he called a honky-tonk guy. He partied a little too much, and Bart Starr was never into that. You know what's fascinating, too, is how many players – does football just miss? You know, Bart Starr could have been that guy that was just missed by the NFL. He played his sophomore year at Alabama, hurt his junior year, benched his senior year, didn't even play. New coaching staff came in, they didn't want to play the seniors. But Bart Starr, he went to he was a big basketball fan at Alabama, and he went to all the practices there just to watch, you know, just to watch basketball practice. He befriended the coach, the basketball coach there, who knew a personnel man with the Packers. He said, you know, give this guy a shot, take a look at him. They used a 17th round pick, as you mentioned, and the rest is kind of history. I mean, it was really a match made in heaven with Vince Lombardi.
When did he win the job?
Boy, very good question. I don't want to give the wrong answer, but it took, you know, 3 or 4 years there, really. I mean, he was battling with some other quarterbacks. And
he beat out Lamar McCann,
right,
finally.
Right.
59 or 60? 59,
and Babe Parilli, who was somebody he worked with in high school.
Yeah.
During one of the summers there, he ended up beating him out, you know, mm-hmm. as his mentor, his idol. So it was a great trip. I mean, and just...
How was Bart?
I mean, everything that you hear about the guy, and by him just being a good man, a great man that will open up and give you his time completely. I mean, probably one thing, I think a telltale sign about people is if you hear a story about that person from others on the peripheral,
right,
that really says a lot about that person. Like the little anecdote in there about Bart Starr giving Eddie Lacy a call to talk, to congratulate him. Mm-hmm. I mean, Bart, he didn't tell me that. It was somebody who knew him.
Okay.
So he's not just teeing up these examples of here's why I'm this great man, this great person. It seems like he just lives that way. Mm-hmm. And Aaron Rodgers, he talked about that as well in the locker room. Summer of 2008, we were both there, and I mean, how stressful of a summer was that for Aaron Rodgers? He's getting booed at family night. Brett Favre's flying on a plane trying to get his job back, and Bart Starr picks up the phone, gives him a call, and it meant so much to mm-hmm. Rodgers. So it was a fun trip, and you know, he's turning 80 years old in January, so I just thought it was a good chance to just try to figure out what is his legacy. So Dan Fouts, Sonny Jurgensen, Bob Greasy, they all were willing to spend a little time to talk about it.
Mm-hmm.
It was a lot of fun.
Yeah. Good stuff.
Well, let's get into some questions on Twitter, Bob, to finish up here. We got a bunch of them here, so we'll jump right into it.
Before we get to the temps again, right?
Oh, man.
All right.
The temptations. Like, next week, you better watch out. You better watch out. All right, this is one from Ed Ronsman. He asks, what is the confidence level of the team? I'm not actually despondent over the start. Better running game, plus D-line this year. It seems like a pretty confident locker room to me. I don't think anybody is panicking. They point to last year when they were 1-2. They were 2-3. They're not worried right now. But I think that there is a little rising urgency. They do realize, like JerMichael Finley said himself, that this is somewhat of a much-needed win kind of a game.
Let's just look at the Lions' schedule. Okay, they're 3-1. All right, they're at Green Bay. They're at Cleveland. They could lose at Cleveland. Cleveland's got will have 10 days off. They host Cincinnati. They host Dallas. Not a whole lot of easy games in here. At Chicago, revenge for the Bears. At Pittsburgh, that could be easy. It's hard to say mm-hmm. where the Steelers will be then. They host Tampa Bay.
Train wreck of a team.
Yeah. They host Green Bay on Thanksgiving. They're at Philly. Okay. They host Baltimore. They host the Giants. Who knows where they are? They could be good by then. It's impossible to say, Ty.
Mark Pellman, he asks, do you think that the Packers kept the wrong backup tight ends? Well, they made the decision to keep Andrew Corliss, Ryan Taylor, Brandon Bostic. JerMichael Finley goes down at Cincinnati. Dynamic of the offense changes. I don't know necessarily if DJ Williams or Matthew Mulligan really would have changed that, but Williams was probably one of the more surprised cuts because he gives you a little versatility. Haven't really kept tabs on how he's been in Jacksonville.
Me either.
I don't know. I don't think that's a...
I've seen Mulligan. I watched him in for New England a couple nights ago. He didn't play much. He caught a touchdown pass. I like the guy. I would have kept Mulligan as a run blocker. I would have kept him. He's not good on special teams. Taylor's a lot better than him on teams, but I do like this guy as a blocker.
Thomas Vandershaft at Tom Vanders. He asks, all three running backs have looked pretty good when healthy this year. In a vacuum, if all three are healthy, that's a big if, who deserves the most work? I think that's a pretty open-ended question right now because they still need to see more of Eddie Lacy. I think that they know in Jonathan Franklin they might have this change of pace, breakaway speed type of guy who offers a different dimension. But James Starks going to be out multiple weeks. He's not healthy. So I just think right now you see a lot of Eddie Lacy, and they go from there.
If they were all healthy, knowing what I know of Lacy right now, which isn't very much, I'd say Starks is the guy. All right, but there I mean, I don't know enough about Lacy to really give an informed opinion.
Talk about a bad break. James Starks was really coming on again before suffering that injury, so we'll see when he gets back. All right, Bob, let's get into a little temptations and call it a day. What do you say?
I think so. So next week we'll be talking about the 1-3 Packers or the 2-2 Packers. No predictions here.
No predictions, Bob?
No. How about nothing? You, Tyler?
I've been talking up the Lions all day, but I think that the urgency for Green Bay is just too high. Packers win.
All right. They get to 500.
There you go.
There's still time to get holiday ready. Right Rug Flooring makes it easy with next day installation and 24-month special financing with approved credit. Carpet, hardwood, luxury vinyl, and tile. We have everything you need to make your home shine for family and friends this season. Schedule a free in-home estimate or find a showroom near you. Visit RightRug.com. RiteRug.com. Be holiday ready with Right Rug Flooring. Right.
Coda has turned up the frequency. Buses are running more often across Central Ohio. Starting this September, you'll see expanded weekend service on the east and north sides, including the Easton and Polaris corridors. Plus, there are added weekday trips downtown from New Albany, Canal, Winchester, and Tuttle. It's more service, more connections, and more ways to move across the city. Discover the enhanced schedule at coda.com/service changes. That's coda.com/service changes.